certain rules are there to be obeyed, certain rules we think are probably a little less important. At work, one of the rules that is taken very seriously is what you do at a red signal. If you go past it, there are so many forms that get filled in. There are so many documents that get completed. And there are investigations that go on forever. And I had a driver not long ago who passed a signal at red by 9 inches. And it doesn't matter whether you pass it by a couple of inches, or my favourite was the driver who passed one by 21 and a half miles. It is still counted as... It was alright, it was Welsh. They don't have many signals in Wales. There aren't many trains in Wales, to be fair. But this guy passed the signal literally by 9 inches. There's a little machine in the middle of the track that tells you when you've gone past it. And he's like, he said he heard the alarm go off and his heart just sank. And what happens is when that someone comes out and basically does an investigation. Someone comes out and they have their little high-vis jacket, their little clipboard, and they ask what exactly happened. And where this happened was on the way into a big station, 6 tracks all the way along, and there's like an overhead gantry, and each line has its own signal. And so there's 6 lights that should tell you when it's safe to go in. And he's going through one of these lines, and the one next to him is green. And he's driving along. He's not going massively fast. He looks up, he sees the green light, pushes up on the power, he goes forward, and then at the last minute he realises, he pulls it back and he stops, and he fails by sort of what? 24 centimetres, for those of you who are metric. He'd looked up, he'd seen a green light, and he'd gone. How many people have done that thing where, you know, where you get the traffic lights and you get the arrows, and you go at the wrong one? You want to go straight, you see a green... It's really easy, isn't it, to read across and read the wrong light. And what we've got in this passage here is a bit like that, because these are the people that Jesus is speaking to are the people who by definition are the good people. These are the people in this passage who, if they'd had traffic lights in first century the Middle East, these people would have obeyed it. These people would have put extra signs up to tell you the traffic lights were coming. But what we've got here is a bit like that driver. In the fact is, they're looking for a green light. They've seen one and they're running on with it. What they're not doing is checking that they're reading the right signal for them. He said, I've done that track a couple of times a week for 20 years. I've never done that before. It's really easy, isn't it? When we're used to doing something, we look up, we expect that light to be green, and then he realised it wasn't. Nobody died, don't worry, it's not really an appropriate use of the story where it ended up in a major train crash or something. But it's really easy for that guy to look up, to see a green light and assume it's his and go on, despite the fact that the light he should have been looking at was telling him something completely different. And throughout John's Gospel, we see opposition to Jesus. And it's people who have been looking at the signals for what they should be doing, and they're reading the wrong message. They're reading a message that says, stop, instead of Jesus' call for life in its fullness. They're reading a message that they think is saying, go and live a life dominated by rules and the old-fashioned ways, when Jesus has come and will say in 2 pages' time, I have come that you might have life and have life in all of its fullness. This reading from John's Gospel that Alison just read to us speaks about Jesus saying, I am the light of the world. I am that signal that will say when you should stop and when you should go. I am that light that gives you the direction in where to go. And in all this, it highlights not only what it means to be obedient to Jesus, but what it means to be distracted and to follow the wrong path. Now, when the pandemic struck, we all did things that made us good people, didn't we? We all went and did those good things because we had time. People learned languages. People went and, they went out and sort of, some people got their Bibles back out. Some people learned to bake bread. We did those things that make us sort of seem like good people. And one of the things we decided to do was go back to having a milkman. Because this was what seemed to be the good thing to do. We got all these messages. Did you know that Dave, your friendly milkman, will come and deliver your milk bottles? And that's all well and good. Apart from two things. On occasion, people would steal our milk. And I'm like, really, if you're that desperate for milk, I will buy you milk. Just don't steal it from my doorstep so when I get up I can't have me porridge. And the other thing that happened at certain times of the year was, and I remember this happening when I was growing up as well, obviously if you get Tesco or Sainsbury's, you buy your milk, you take it home in the car and you put it straight in your fridge. If you get it from the milkman, you've got this vulnerable patch, haven't you? When after he's come at some ridiculous hour in the morning and leaves it on your doorstep with its little silver top, it's a target for birds. And I was coming up, and I'd open the door in the morning, and I'd have that sort of groggy look on my face. And I find that between 5 o'clock, when the milkman comes, and when I would get up at, let's just quit, not 5 o'clock, there would have been a chance for a bird to come and to see that reflective top and tap it in. And I was talking about this to someone, and you know what made me really mad? The bird doesn't even want the milk. The bird wants the shiny thing on the top. And I'm like, this isn't fair. This bird is ruining my day before it started just because it sees, oh, something shiny. It sees something that it thinks appeals to it, and it wants to take it. And that's what's happening here. All the way through this story, all the way through Jesus' encounter with authority, the Pharisees are seeing that which looks shiny and looks pretty. But do you know what? If you go, that bird takes a milk bottle top off, it's not satisfying for very long. And here, the Jewish leaders are going and they're taking, doing that thing that says, oh, I'll just see something that appeals. I'll look for an easy find. And they take it on with Jesus and they're missing the point. It's like those birds ignoring the milk that is good just for the shiny bit on the top. And so often it is easy to miss the point. It is easy to misread the situation. And Jesus says at the beginning of this passage in John chapter 8 verse 12, he spoke again to the people and said, I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will never walk in darkness, but will have the light of life. And the Pharisees come up, and when I say to you Pharisees, it's a bit like going back to that pantomime I mentioned. So if you see the Pharisees come on, if this was pantomime, we'd boo them. The Pharisees were not bad people. They were not the enemy. The Romans are the people nobody liked. The Pharisees are the guys in the good suits. They're the guys who everybody thinks should be sensible. They're the guys that set the rules. I won't go and say they're the MPs because that might not help my good guys line. But they're the guys that set an example for what we should be doing. And yet, we now understand Pharisees as the villains. Because the Pharisees didn't understand what was going on. They were so attached to their rules of what they knew should be happening that they didn't see what was really happening. And when Jesus says, "I am the light of the world," the Pharisees were turning around and saying, "Our world is bright enough thanks to the torches we read our rule books by." And here, we need to look and ask ourselves, what is God in the middle of doing? You see, here it goes on, and Jesus and Pharisees say to Jesus, "You're appearing as your own witness." This is a bit like someone going into court and the defence saying, "I promise I didn't do it. Honestly, I didn't do it." But Jesus is different, because Jesus not only tells the truth, Jesus is the truth. But the Pharisees couldn't realise that. Jesus is speaking truth to power. He's bringing light to darkness. He's bringing the way to the lost. And here, time and again, Jesus starts to open up what it means to follow God. Each time we get one of those "I am" statements in John's Gospel, "I am the way, I am the door, the gate. I'm the way, the truth, and the life. I am the light of the world. I am the bread of life." Jesus is revealing something about what it means to live life in community and communion with God. And what I want to leave you with today, before we move on to communion, is a word about the light that Jesus puts on. Now, when we moved in there to our new house, we put new light bulbs all the way throughout. And now energy-saving light bulbs have got a lot better. You don't have to have half an hour in darkness before you can see light with them. You know, when the energy-saving light bulbs were new and you had to think about 20 minutes before you wanted to be able to see to put the light on. And the light all around the house is there. And that, very different. When I go to my sister's house, she does mood lighting. They've got up lighters on the wall, and she says, "Oh, it's nice, it's chilled," and I went, "It's dark." I'm like, "You earn more money than I do, you can afford to have all the lights on." But I like to be able to see. I like it to be bright. And when Jesus speaks to the people and says, "I am the light of the world," he is, some people think, like those old bulbs, where sort of you can turn it on and it takes a while and it's a bit dark and dingy. But Jesus is that which brings light to even the darkest corner. Jesus is the light that does not leave things in shadows. And I think today, Jesus would say he will bring light to the uncertainties of life. When Bev emailed and asked if I'd come down and preach, I didn't realise today would literally be Sunday one of the pastoral vacancy. I didn't realise sort of literally the chair would sort of still be warm. But one of the things that I think is really important to remember when we look at Jesus, the light of the world, in the context of the church starting a pastoral vacancy, is to say that Jesus, the light of the world, does not move on. As we look at what an interregnum holds, what happens with the future, how church is shaped by Pastor David's time here and now the future, Jesus does not move on with him and leave us behind to wait for somebody new. Jesus says in our midst, and Jesus says, "I am the light of the world," during this time of uncertainty. During this time when you wonder what the next, I didn't think how I was going to end that sentence with a period of time, what this next time will be. Jesus wants us all to know that his light shines just as brightly. His light shines on in the darkness around the church, and he brings the light of life to us and to those to whom we're ministering. Jesus says to us today, "I am not leaving you, and my light is here." And the question I've got for you to ask you today is, where are you carrying that light? And I want to ask you this because I realise that we actually, with the light of Jesus, do what I do every day of the week. I never go anywhere without a torch. In my bag of magic stuff for work that I take with me everywhere, I've got a torch that's pretty solid, mainly because I drop it a lot. And it's in my bag all the time for when I need it. I very rarely need to get it out though, because I rely on other lights. I rely on the lights that get turned on at stations when it gets dark. The lights in offices, the light of the day. And so I neglect the torch and leave it there, and then when I remember I need it, I've not checked the batteries. And we're all a bit like that. We take our Jesus light round, tucked in our bags, kept in our pockets, and are quite happy to enjoy the light of everything else. But what we need to remember is that that light of Christ is brighter than any other light the world can bring. And when Jesus says, "I am the light of the world," he doesn't fade, his batteries don't run out. And he says, "Will you use that light to bring light to the world around you? And will you look at your own life through the light that I give?" Amen.